Good evening, this very warm May day. My hands are really perspiring. I don't know if that was from the heat or because I had to give a talk. I'm not sure, but I have my summer robes, but doesn't quite feel light enough. Thank you all for coming this evening. Yesterday morning, which seems like an awfully long time ago, and maybe it didn't even happen, but I was Doshi. And the days are getting longer, and so while I was waiting for the sitting to begin, standing outside, I was noticing that the sky was beginning to turn blue, and it was very still, and I know that the slight light in the sky and the smell of incense and the stillness just brought back all these accumulated memories of sitting in the early morning at various sitting places. It just felt very kind of special. And during the sitting period, gradually I felt my Zazen deepen. And then the bell rang. And as soon as the bell rang, everyone, as usual, began to chant the verse of the Kesa. This is a Kesa. Great robe of liberation, feel far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching, saving all beings. But when people started chanting, it just sounded strange. I got startled by hearing the voices. And I think it was because it seemed so still that it was a surprise to me. We're in the world, and it sort of gave me the feeling that this verse is kind of like a transition from the looking inward and sitting to going out in the world and practicing and expressing our bodhisattva vow to, I don't know if it's quite saving others, but being with others. I kind of like to look at it that way, being with all people. And sometimes sitting in the zendo is easier than the other thing. Our main practice here is sitting, and I recalled something that my first teacher, Koban Chino, said, and Koban was the founding member of this temple, and he said this. I don't remember him saying it, but I was there when he said it, because a group of us met with him. This was for a couple of years shortly before he passed away. And these were his longtime students. And one of the people there asked him, Koban, why do we sit? And I would like to read to you his response. We sit to make life meaningful. The significance of our life is not experienced in striving to create some perfect thing. We must simply start with accepting ourselves. Sitting brings us back to actually who and where we are. This can be very painful. Self-acceptance is the hardest thing to do. If we can't accept ourselves, we are living in ignorance, this darkest night. We may still be awake, but we don't know where we are. We cannot see. The mind has no light. Practice is this candle in our very darkest room. Accepting ourselves. For me, it's when I sit down, I'm not thinking I'm accepting myself, but just the willingness for us, each of us, to be with ourselves in this way. Day after day, for me, it gives meaning to my life. That meaning isn't a conceptual meaning. It's more, I get up in the morning and I just sit no matter what time it is. And it's like an affirmation. I think Catherine Fannis, who was the teacher here until she passed away a few years ago, expressed it as saying yes to yourself. And my Izumi Roshi, who I practice with in Los Angeles, often said appreciating oneself. And it sounds very simple, and the idea is very simple, but, you know, of course it's hard to do. I know that, Zazen doesn't end when the bell rings. The attitude of practice, of accepting oneself, goes on throughout one's life. And I know that for myself, there are times when I feel so accepting, and then at other times when I feel like I'm just trashing myself. And I think, am I the only one? And I think, no, I couldn't be. And I think we all go through this when things aren't going the way we want them to. We feel we've hurt somebody or whatever it is that has gone on in our life that doesn't feel right. We tend to reject ourselves, and it's very hard not to. But my feeling is that if we have a strong practice, meaning that if we sit day after day, that our being somehow gets used to letting it go. So even though we might reject something about ourselves, the next moment is a new opportunity. And to live in that space of, I guess it would maybe be renewal, is how we practice. I would recall that I think I must have been in high school at the time. There was a book, I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember, but by Eric Fromm, called The Art of Loving. And maybe it's still being read, I don't know, but it came out when I was in high school. And somehow that book was a very important book to me. It sort of like kind of woke me up as to, you know, what am I doing with my life? And giving me some thought about how to live this life. And the only thing I remember from it was that in order to love others, one had to love oneself, which is, to to me the same thing as accepting oneself. And so I went online and looked up quotes from the book to see if I could find this quote. And I actually didn't find Fromm talking about that, but he actually quoted Meister Eckhart. And Meister Eckhart was someone that Koban used to quote a lot. Fromm was born in 1900. Eckhart was born in 1260. So that was soon after Koban died, and he was a theologian. And let's see if I...
When was Eckhart? In 1200s?
1260. Yeah. A long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're still reading his words. Yeah. If you love yourself, you love everybody else as you do yourself. As long as you love another person less than you love yourself, you will not really succeed in loving yourself. But if you love all alike, including yourself, you will love them as one person, and that person is both God and man. Thus, he is a great and righteous person who, loving himself, loves all others equally. Inspiring words. Koban used to talk about how everything comes from our practice of Zazen, and although he was steeped in the teachings, he didn't emphasize them so much. When he gave talks, he would quote people and he would talk about the teachings, but it was definitely a feeling that Zazen was the central, was central to our practice. And I guess it was shortly before he passed away, someone named Sean Murphy, who writes about Zen, met with Koban and asked if he could interview him for a book that he was writing on Zen. And Koban was silent for a few minutes and then smiled and said, "Tell them there is no such thing as Zen. There is only sitting." And indeed, we call what we do shikantaza, which means just sitting. And to have faith in that just sitting. Even if we don't fully comprehend what's happening, is central to what we're doing. When we read the sutras, everything sounds like a metaphor. And to help us understand what we can't understand. We're doing our practice is called the middle way, and it's the middle way is neither empty or existent. It goes beyond both those things. And then we bring compassion to that place. And that's our way of being in the world. So we, by seeing the letting go of things, realizing that they just are appearances, like when I talked about what happened yesterday morning, it's a story, and it's like it didn't happen, but I'm telling it to you. And and so these appearances of things, and the emptiness kind of, you know, come together in a way so that we don't have to suffer. We let go, like I spoke about before, when things happen that are difficult for us, or even if things happen that we like and that we can't, we don't want to give up. We do anyway, because there's no other way to be. It's hard to talk about. Recently, I read a book called Lincoln and Lombardo. And are any of you familiar with the book? I know Ken is somewhat familiar with it. He didn't read it, though, right? Yeah. And it's about a true life experience that Abraham Lincoln had when he was president. His son, I think he was around 10 years old, got very sick and died. And Lincoln was quite distraught and could not accept his son's death. And the book sort of approaches it from two different angles. One, it keeps switching back and forth. In one part, it's true accounts of what actually happened in those few days before and after Willie died. And the other part are the people in the Bardo. And as you may know, the Bardo is this space, what, limbo, where it's in Tibetan Buddhism, between one life and another. And so it's spirits without bodies, and they haven't been able to let go of this life, and they're not accepting that they're really dead. And so they're repeating over and over again how they live their lives. They're not able to let go of destructive tendencies. And in a sense, Lincoln himself was in a living Bardo, because he was unable to let go of his son's death. He, on two occasions, he came to the crypt where his son was, and took his body out of the coffin and held it. And he just couldn't let go. And finally he did. And when he did let go, he realized that he wasn't the only one suffering. That there, especially this was during the Civil War, that there were many, many people who were suffering, and that he was in a position to help others. And that's what he was not that he didn't continue to suffer in a certain level, but it was he was willing to commit himself to serving others through this this very sad thing that happened to him. And when I was reading the book, it was almost more had more of an impact on me than reading a Dharma book. And I think it was because when I was reading the accounts of these people who were suffering in the Bardo, it was a little scary. It's not that I don't know whether it is that kind of Bardo or not, but I could see how in my own life that I do the same thing. And it really had an impact on, and I felt like I've really got to practice, and I don't want, like, that's not a good space to be in, and to break habits, let's say. Does anybody have anything they'd like to share? Patrick?
Well, I like that that idea that our sitting is a practice of self-acceptance. After you've sat, even just a few periods of meditation, you know that sometimes your mind will be quiet, or this almost speak of my own mind, my mind will be quiet sometimes, and sometimes it's just going to be, these old habits chatter, thoughts mm-hmm. about my life and what I need to do next, maybe the next hour or the next decade, or and then knowing that it's going to be that way. When I sit down, it really is saying, okay, I'm open to what comes up. Having that practice of not holding on to things so tightly, just sitting here is breaking the habit of going with your thoughts all the time. It's not somebody letting it go. So there is sort of an openness. Okay, I'll be with me. I'll let these thoughts live a little bit and then let them go. It really is a nice acceptance, or a willingness to just be with me. Mm-hmm. Accept me for another 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice way of looking at it.
So a similar experience as far as the idea of acceptance was, I think the first time I really got into my body, where I felt it was in my body, and I didn't at that time know it was, you could call it love, but that's what it is, and then when I was able to, when I am able to accept myself a little bit more, I also accept others as well, a little bit more, and the other thing that I came to my mind that resonated from what you were saying was that a lot of the times if I'm in my own bardo or if I'm in my own challenges. It's that feeling of being upright and in an accepting mode, like, you know, being, I remember our sensei used to say, being a rock in a river, just, you know, being still with things going by, and just, you know, hold still into. And there's something about just letting that stream of thoughts go by and just standing up or sitting upright. And it just kind of has a transformative kind of feeling when you can actually let go. And I just always appreciated that. You know, and that's what kind of what hooked me to that actually was that challenge. And to, because before that, it felt like I was just always in my head trying to grasp it, trying to make sense of my life and trying to hold on to something that always failed. You know, constantly trying to find some kind of aphorism to live by or something that just needed to shut up. You know, so I find that very powerful. And, you know, that's what Zen is for me too. I think it's just sitting in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that's the organic process for me. When I'm in doubt, that's what I do, I sit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I appreciate that.
And I think that's why it's so difficult to talk about it. Because we end up talking about something else. Yeah. Anyone else? Lori?
I love the idea of saying yes to myself. It makes me feel very calm. Mm-hmm. And I can relax. And then I also like to think about turning that around, saying yes to other people. What does that look like? And differentiating between saying yes to somebody's beingness versus saying yes to what they do, you know, and trying to remember to separate those things, because there are many things that people do that are not acceptable to me. But their beingness is essentially yes. I mean, saying yes to that. So I like the idea of saying yes to myself and turning that around and saying yes to other people, recognizing that saying yes to their beingness is not like writing a blank check for them to, you know, be irresponsible or unkind or harmful, but that somewhere in there, there's a core of something to say yes to, and maybe my job is to find it.
Mm, thank you. Yeah, that saying yes to yourself allows you, and maybe it's the same thing, it's kind of like the giver, the receiver, and the gift. It's all one thing. And there's no differentiation. And so if you're saying yes to yourself, you're saying yes to others. And yeah, thank you. Stan?
I really did appreciate your talk and your heart-to-heart and being able to talk about things you can't really put into words. What helps me in sitting, and sometimes when I remember it in life, is just to slow down. Mm-hmm. Just to take a break and breathe and let the breath naturally slow down. And that happens naturally here. But I find it's very helpful to do, like when I'm teaching and in daily life. And that brings me back to being more just present and being able to respond more lovingly and acceptingly, right? As you were saying, to other beings that may not be doing things that are helpful, but they're still beings. And they can always change and or be still and know, you know.
I was just thinking about the other day, I went to get a slice of pizza my heart on 41st Avenue, 12 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, so the traffic was a mess, and, you know, it was like, oh my God, what am I doing? And I go in, and it's just, you know, insanity, and, you know, I felt myself going to that place that you're talking about. And when I ordered it, being very present with ordering, and then being very present with pain, and then when I walked out the door, there was somebody holding the door for me, and, you know, we both acknowledged each other. And it was very nice because it was like a teaching for me that this is the way it can be. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to get caught up in the frenzy.
Backward step.
Yeah, and acknowledge that other people, there are people there who are working really hard and are probably really hot and tired making all that pizza. And so appreciating everything, even though it was kind of pandemonium. Pardon?
And you enjoyed it, didn't you?
Oh, it was delicious. Super veggie pizza.
Became a pizza of your heart.
Right. My favorite pizza. Thank you, Stan.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I just want to say thank you, and I'm really grateful that you're with us, especially with your connection with COVID and the long history that you've had here. And every time you talk, you speak about your experiences with him. I don't hear that from anyone else, so it's nice. I've never met him, I don't know him, but it's really nice to hear that from you, that it's alive in you.
Oh, thank you.
Just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Lisa. If you go online, there are some nice talks that you can hear that he and get a sense of his flavor.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Are they on our website? Or
no. I can give you a link to one talk that I really like.
Okay.
So if you give me your email address, I'll send you a link.
There's a couple on our website.
Oh, there are?
At the furthest, you go to the very bottom.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you have the one at Prairieg where he gives that long talk and talks about Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
That's
the
a nice one.
On our website, what talks that he gave here in Zendo.
Really?
Yeah, just a couple.
And they were, they're not video, you can't see him.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there is one on YouTube.
Okay, anyone else? What is your name?
Ryan. Yeah.
And your name is?
Jason.
Jacob?
Jason.
Edie?
I was thinking about fearlessness as you were speaking of acceptance. I don't know why it came up together for me, but there's a sense of risk and being fearless and facing difficulties. Willingness to do it, being fearless about it.
I think that's a gift we can give each other, because I think we all go through it, and I know coming here a few times a week helps reduce the fear and really supports my life. It's nice to see you always here when I do come. Thank you. Yara? Nothing. Thanks for the smile.
Thank you for speaking tonight.
You're welcome.
Oh, it's a bit of a challenge, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spend most of my time by myself. And so apart from not having much experience talking to a group, I hardly talk to anybody. So it's a little bit of a stretch. Tokyo, you haven't said anything except them.
I appreciate the loving ourselves and loving others going together.
Yeah.
And, the more we see that others are ourselves in the deepest possible way when we're relating to another. In this deep way, it is actually relating to ourselves. So I feel like if I can't love another, it's kind of like it is like I'm not loving part of myself, and vice versa. If I can't love part of myself, like Meister Eckhart said, I can't fully love all others.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's so true, and they're inseparable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a nice way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our boundless, I bow to them.